Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM. Good morning. So when the pandemic struck, we were all terrified and as school shut, we did our best to protect children. Or did we? Why was it so easy to tell kids to stay indoors and out of shops? And what effect might that have? Well, Ellie Lee is Professor of Family and Parenting Research at Kent University, and she joins me now. Good morning.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for doing this, Ellie. Can I ask you, looking back, what did we take away from children and teenagers back when it looked like the world was about to end?
Well, I think that we took away most things, didn't we? And I don't think that we've got past this, actually. And I think it's going to be one of the aspects of this kind of whole social shock.
You think the aftermath, we're in to see the aftermath of our actions now with kids especially?
Well, yes, but I don't think that it's not like their lives have gone back to what they were before.
Yeah.
We still seem continually reluctant to, push ahead. There's sort of, lip service paid to the idea and a lot of hand-wringing about the fact that, we must never do this again. The implications of particularly what happened with schooling, commentaries about how this is going to exacerbate all the existing social divisions, make things much worse for children who are already the least advantaged. There's a lot of sort of rhetorical recognition of the extent of some of the problems. But really, as far as I can see, the energy being put into really trying to go for it now is not there. So I don't think that we're through this yet. And to me, what it really does emphasise is just how deep the pre-existing emphasis on keeping children safe, that the extent to which that has corroded our ability to actually do what's needed.
I'm just thinking back, just listening to you speak, I'm thinking back to a time, even our language around the pandemic with kids, like we were calling them vectors. Remember that? Jesus. I mean, even
Absolutely.
The word, it's kind of frightening. So no longer were they your grandkids or your daughter. They were vectors who were dangerous. We stopped them from doing things like seeing their friends and going to the shop for sweets and all of that. And it's quite frightening. What could we have done to lessen the isolation of children, do you think?
Well, I think we could have just not taken so much away from them. Mm. And for me, the curiosity of the whole thing, which I think we do now, adults who see this problem do now have a responsibility to find ways of opening up the discussion, coming to terms with what's happened and doing something better. The thing that, I think that we have to explain is that from very, very early on in the pandemic, it was very clear that the most distinctive fact of this particular disease was its patterning by age. Mm. We knew that really early on. It was established. Yet we seemed completely unable to find ways of taking advantage of the fact that, thank God, or whoever you want to thank, this disease doesn't take children and doesn't even make them that ill. Instead, we did what you said, which is, oh my goodness, let's think of them as germs on legs. There's a lot of discussion this week about this very large survey that's been done across the whole of Europe about the differential experiences of the pandemic, with age being one of the things that has really shaped people's perceptions of the harm that's been done to them, with younger people feeling a real sense of grievance, understandably.
Now, your work is really interesting in how families work and what leads to certain trends. Can you explain for me what neuroparenting is?
Well, so this is a term. It was actually a term coined by a colleague that works in the research centre with me, Jan McVarish. but it's a term that she coined to describe the way in which a whole idea has become very, very strong, that if parents don't do certain things in regards to their child rearing practices when their children are very young, or actually the whole emphasis on this begins right back before there's even a pregnancy, carries on right through pregnancy and is around all of the kind of official messages and policy messages about very young children. If you don't do the right things with them, then you are their brains will be damaged. And that will impair their later development and so society as a whole. So there's a lot of advice that parents are given, which is very kind of dramatic and I think quite frightening, about if you don't do certain things, then children's cognitive abilities, but also their emotional set will be kind of permanently impaired. So this runs through everything from advice about how you should feed your babies. Mm-hmm. It's in the whole kind of breastfeeding, bottle feeding, you know, which is obviously a very long-standing kind of area of conflict about the advice that mothers are given about how to look after babies.
Sleeping with babies, not sleeping with babies in the bed, all of that.
What you do with them in a pushchair, there's a kind of... A big kind of pushback against having buggies that face outwards on the grounds. If you're not looking at your baby all the time, then you're going to create some kind of level of neurological damage. So the emphasis is on having a front-facing buggy.
God. Ellie, how far down the road have we already gone where parents just don't trust their own instinct?
Well, I think a very long way. And I mean, you know, there's equally a lot of evidence about the damage that this kind of emphasis on. Well, it's what a sociologist friend of mine that we set up the centre with, it's what he describes a situation where parents are now seen as foolish gods. And he says that's the kind of paradox of the thing. So we're told that as a parent, you are the most powerful person in your child's life. So the influence of what you do outstrips everything. So we're told, for example, that parents are more important than schools in terms of educational outcomes. So there's you know, all sorts of articulations of this idea that what the influence of parents is far more important than anything else. But you're also told you're a complete idiot.
Yeah.
And you don't know the first thing about what you're doing, and that if you're not very, very careful, just in terms of doing what you think you should do, unintentionally, you're going to harm your child. And I think it does put parents in a very, very difficult position where, I mean, the book that this is most set out in, this position that I'm describing about foolish gods, it's called Paranoid Parenting. And the suggestion there is that it does create this kind of psychological emotional state in parents, which is a kind of paranoia where you just everything, mm-hmm. you know, feels like that it's all out to get you and that everything's difficult all of the time. And I think that is now a part of parental experience where you just don't feel like you can do right for doing wrong.
There's just too much advice. There's too much out there. I mean, online, on ads, it's coming at you from every angle. So how important is it for parents out there just to trust their instincts?
Well, I think it's very important. And I think that, I mean, one of the things that I think is a real problem with all of this is I do think that parents are very, very important. And, you know, there's something I think very, very divisive and very undermining. I mean, it's really in the whole the neuroparenting thing. So one of the things that's part of the neuroparenting thing is that a load of stuff that parents would just that they just do naturally because they love their children, like talking to them, playing with them, reading to them, singing, or just being with them, just doing stuff together that you like doing because you're developing a relationship with another person. I mean, that's what being a parent is, isn't it? You're developing a relationship with another person. And that inevitably is personal. You know, it's idiosyncratic. It's about you and your child. It's inherently not subject to kind of generalized rules about how this relationship should be, because it's a relationship. Very unfortunately, our policy frameworks and culture instrumentalizes all of those things all the time and turns them into learning opportunities through which you can develop a better child who's cleverer, does better, performs better at school, is somehow one up on all the other children. And this is one of the things I find so insidious about neuroparenting, is that just really ordinary things like, you know, feeding your kid, playing with your child, instead of being seen as acts of love or just normal, ordinary, quite boring things that we might be doing, are instead turned into these things that you're supposed to be doing with a purpose, you know, to somehow make your child into a better child. And I think it is very destructive of what matters about being a parent, you know, which is at the end of the day that you love your kid and you show your love in the way that is to do with what you're like and what they're like and what your particular family's like. And I think that our culture is really losing respect for that. It's a kind of privacy thing, really, that we should be able to conduct our parenting, as everybody now calls it, bringing up kids and how we want to be with our kids. We should be able to do that in a way that feels right to us. And that's full of, you know, the emotions and mixed experiences that it is, and that we learn from them, and we learn from them in our own ways, with our other family members, with our friends and so on. And I think there is a kind of, the subtitle of this book my colleague wrote about neuroparenting is called The Expert Invasion of Family Life. And I think that there is something of an invasion, and I think it is invasive, all of this. And the more that we can have confidence to bring up our kids in a way that we want to do, you know, responsibly throwing ourselves into it and learning lessons from it, actually the better parents will be. We'll be better parents if we do it that way, rather than feeling all the time that, you know, we're getting it wrong, because then you're not confident, or you're not at least prepared, open to learning for yourself.
You're probably just not in the moment. I find myself as a parent sometimes being very distracted in the moment when I am feeding or reading, because I feel like, oh, I should be getting her to read. And I you know, you're kind of conditioned to think this should be a learning environment all the time.
Exactly. And it's just completely wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing, you know, having fun reading with your kids, great. But, you know, what it's like, I think it's one of the things that's very difficult about relations with schools as well. And, you know, with the whole kind of, you know, school saying to you all the time, you know, you've got to fill in the reading record. You've got to read this book, and you've got to read it with your child now, and you've got to do it every day. And it's become this kind of completely overstructured, whereas it should be freer and it should be for pleasure. And if you don't like that particular book, read another one, or read anything, or do what you like, to be honest.
Do what you like, just be in the moment with them and enjoy
developing the relationship with the child, and both becoming different people as a result. But I think the problem is that I think parents don't really feel as in control of this as they need to, because it does have to be something that's directed by you and the relationships that you have with others around you, rather than have this whole kind of structure over it, which it now has.
Ellie Lee, thank you so much for those wise words. That is Ellie Lee, Professor of Family and Parenting Research at Kent University. Just want to thank her for coming on. Lots to think about there. How do you feel? Are you neuroparenting? Do you find yourself doing that? Let me know. 51552. We'll be right back.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.